Okay, this is, what is today? Is it
today? Today is my birthday.
Really?
80 years old today.
Wow.
That's getting up there.
So it's June
the 24th.
This is June the 24th.
I was born in 1923.
I'm Rachel Peterson interviewing Bryce Ramsey. When and where were you born, sir?
I was born in Fredonia, Kansas, on the southeast part of Kansas there. I was born at home in bed. All of us kids were, because they didn't have a hospital in Fredonia at that time.
Okay.
And we was all just born there in a bed at home there. Old Doc Flack came in. That's, we were all born there.
How big was your family?
Well, there's five boys and one girl.
Were you the oldest?
I was right in the middle of the boys. I had two brothers older and two brothers younger than me. So I was right in the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we grew up during the old Depression days, you know. And my dad, he was a good old guy, but boy, I'm telling you what, he had to work. WPA, I don't know if you ever heard of it or not, but the Workers' Project Administration.
Oh, okay.
That was a Roosevelt deal there in the 30s. And then the Depression days, you get $35 a month. Pretty hard work. They build buildings and stuff like that. Yeah. My dad was on it probably a year or so. And then he got back and got on to work at Linseed Oil Mill. Okay. He's working there when I graduated high school. And of course, as quick as I graduated high school, I wanted to be a pilot on the flying planes.
Uh-huh.
World War II, you know. That's, of course, I was, actually, I had a job as a janitor at this Linseed Oil Mill and office there. And I was down there Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941. Mm-hmm. And here come this old boy as a chemist there, rushing in there to get his, he told me, he says, you know the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor? I said, where the heck Pearl Harbor at?
Where's Pearl Harbor?
Well, anyway, so then I found out we was in war. So, of course, then I graduated in the spring in 42 and got into the service there. I was going to get into the cadet program, but didn't make it. Finally, I wound up as a mechanic on the ground. Then I went on to decide to go to be a aero gunner. So I was what they call a gunner engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually flew the top turret. Up there, sometimes Lopez wanted it, so I flew the waist gun. It didn't make a difference to me. And so we flew out of China. We flew out of CBI, it's called it, China, Burma, India, mm-hmm. Theater. And I flew my 35 missions. And I never officially ever got credited with a Japanese plane shot down, but I shot at a few of them. But anyway, so that graduated out of that service there in November of 45, that's when I got out. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And my dad says, well, to be a dentist. I says, look at that, and I said, oh, no. Look at people's mouth, I don't think he wants it. And I find out, I look down there, and sure enough, the school teacher, my brothers were going down to, had a horology department. That's watch repair, you know, horology department. And so I went down there and got in there. I stayed there about 16 months. Then I came and went to work in Fredonia for a while and home again. Then I moved out here to Western Kansas. I've been in Cimarron since March 1948.
Wow.
And that's a while.
That is a while.
Yeah. And you want to know something about that? I tell you what, I got to talk to quite a few of the old guys. And if it passed on since the little hot firestone.
Uh-huh.
I wish the heck that I'd had a recorder, you know, to record his stories.
Mm-hmm.
He was the old sheriff for quite a while here. And he was about on his last legs when I was there. But he loved to talk about it, you know. And he had service groups with the outlaws here on the trail, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a team train robbery back in here, Cimarron, way back in the 20s, I think, sometime in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sheriff then. And then, of course, I remember Ralph Clark. I was working at his drugstore down there. Clark's Farm is still called the Clark's Farm, see, when all the Clarks are all dead now. But anyway, well, I don't know. What else you want to know about me, anything particular?
Well, just anything. So you grew up during the Depression and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Were you in town or?
Oh yeah. We lived in a small town, it's Brigham Cimarron, Bononia, over in southeast Kansas there. And we was poor church mice, I think, there. But we didn't know the difference, we had fun. And so I remember the, of course in the Dust Bowl days here, and the dust was in the air back there, you could see it sometimes. But it was never, was like it was out here. I didn't get out here after the Dust Bowl days are all over. And that was in the dirty 30s when they was, then they had those big clouds of dust coming in there, you know. So I had the guys tell me all about it, you know, that you couldn't see nothing, you know, from the streets. It's so dirty. But Cimarron got over that. And now we're hoping the farmers can get a little wheat.
Yeah, hopefully.
But, I got to talking to the Luther brothers, you know, and their dad was one of them that established Cimarron, Luther brothers' dad. Of course, there was three or four of those boys, and I knew them all. In fact, I bought my land for my home from Forrest Luther. And in 1936, he bought that square that's three or four blocks north of here on the east west side for $12.
Wow.
At a tax sale.
Wow.
He got the whole block for $12.
Wow. So, that's mind blowing.
Yeah, well, nobody had any money during the days, you know, there. And then, of course, World War II come along, and then farmers got to get a little bit more money then, so. But I knew a lot of us was here. There's a lot of them going. There's only one guy that's been in business longer in Cimarron than I have. That's old Bruce Ferguson down here at the barber shop. He's a year older than me. And he started working in his dad's shop in 1947. And I went to the shop in Clark's Pharmacy down there in 1948.
So what did you do at Clark's Pharmacy?
Well, the same thing we did here. I have a little watch repair shop there. Mostly I worked on watches there. Now I'm working on an awful lot of clocks now. Mostly clocks now. But then I worked on watches. Of course, the good old wind-up watches, they give you trouble everybody every year and a half or so. So I haven't done bad at all. I got a nice wife and four kids of my own. I got 14 grandkids.
Wow.
And 9 great-grandkids.
Wow.
And then they're all doing good for all that.
This sounds good.
We went to a wedding up in my son's daughter up in Minnesota. One of his daughters graduated from high school, and the other graduated last year. She got married. So we went to, one day we went to a wedding, next day we went to graduation up in Alexandria, Minnesota. Now we got to go out there to Colorado out there because they got another grandson that's going to get married the 5th of July out there. So we'll have fun. We'll run around and see them all.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It was, yes. Instead, you know, if you want a kind of a history of Cimarron there, there's a movie. The library's got it.
Oh, yeah?
A video. A Small Town USA.
Huh.
It was made out here in Cimarron, well, four towns. Cimarron, and there's three or four other towns along the movie there. We're told about a small town in the USA. It's talking about everything, you know, and Dust Bowl days and everything like that. Was being done. It's pretty nice, you know, to get a hold of that, the library. I got it, library.
See, I'll have to look.
NBC made it, didn't they? Then they didn't have any use for it anymore, so they sent the film through the library.
So they came out to Cimarron and just made this
film? Yeah, they was in Cimarron probably 4 to 6 weeks making it.
Were you here when made that thing?
Sure.
Do you remember anything about the filming?
Oh, yeah, I watched them. I never did get into it. But they had quite a story about Cimarron.
I'm sure.
And it's up at the library. They didn't tell you about that, huh?
Well, I heard someone mention that NBC did something, but...
Yeah, they made that a special, hour-long special, way back in those days there. I don't know how come Cimarron got chosen, but they did. So anyway, there's there's old Frank Luther. I was talking to Dick Leatherwood. That's when Dick Leatherwood was a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Telling him about the old country and everything. Of course, the Luther boys, they knew all about it because their dad was part of the county seat fight. See, there was quite a county seat fight here,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure just exactly when it was, 1880s, 18, probably about 1880 somewhere in there. And we got the cabbage onto the county seat. And Ingalls decided they wanted the county seats over there. So they sent some guys over here to get all the books and everything, the county seat, and haul over to Ingalls. And that was a pretty good fight there.
I would imagine.
Yeah, it's a county seat gunfight there. And it's quite a bit of history there about it. And then, of course, I heard them talking about the blizzard of, what was it, 88 or something like that, that they lost thousands of head of cattle out here. But one day in January, it was nice and balmy. The next day, here come all this wind and snow and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many cattle they lost, but they lost quite a few. But like some of the cattle, the guys out of business. But I've been out here since 1948, and I've never planted a bushel of wheat, and I've never harvested a bushel of wheat. I probably never will. Well, I don't know I had fun doing the service. Well, I say how fun. It was exciting. And I might tell you one story that happened. And of course, I was flying left waist gun. You don't look at the window, put your gun out there, sit there behind it. And I was flying waist gunner this time. And it was Nanking at that time. They had these warehouses along the riverfront there.
Okay, one more time. Where were you?
In China.
Okay.
China, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I flew the 14th Air Force, and of course we liberated. We call ourselves the 14th Air Force, Flying Tigers, but we weren't really the Flying Tigers. We were the bomber bunches.
Mm-hmm.
And we flew with Liberators, the old four-engine Liberator.
Okay.
And so we took off from our base, Luoyang, and so we're going to head out towards Nanking on the Yangtze River up there. And that's probably about 24, 25 of us bombers. And we circle this fighter field, and here come up the P-40s, mostly the Chinese pilots there, about 20 of them,
mm-hmm.
come up and join the rest of it. And we said, well, that's good enough, we can do it all right. So we bombed the warehouses there at Nanking on the river, Japanese warehouses, and then we turned out over the lake. And I was standing in the waist gunner, and I saw flashes right straight above me. And I said, looked out there, and I said, here's our P-40s out here. Who's that up there? And I could see planes going around and around and around up there.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon it started coming down, and I found out what happened was that they had brought in 15 brand new P-51 Mustangs. That's considered the best fighter plane in the engine during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a bunch of them around. They're nice planes. But they could sure fight. And anyway, that was what I saw was there was 22 or so Japanese Zeros were circling around up there that were going to drop down on us. That's probably 24,000. We were flying about 17,000, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And we circled out over the lake, and these Zeros were going to drop down on top of us. But these P-51 Mustangs come into Chikyang fire base the day before we were bombing. Nobody told the Japanese. And they took off before we got to to circle the base. And they were flying almost 30,000 feet. And we had high cover and didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they dropped down on the Zeros before the Zeros could drop down on us. And that's what I saw up there going around and around with the P-51s and the Zeros. And they said they shot down 20 Zeros that day, have a loss of one P-40.
Wow.
And I had experience there, because I was sitting in the waist gun, you know. I saw this Japanese come up on my side, and I was going to get ready to shoot the heck out of him. But he was on fire. He was on fire. Well, he was burning. And I seen a P-40 sitting behind him, just talking to that in there. Mm-hmm. And I seen the old Japanese pilot try to get out of that burning plane, you know. I said, come on, get out of there. You know, because really didn't want to kill him. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so he bailed out of that. Because if they have a parachute, it's one that their family has got for them and made for them. Because the government didn't issue me any parachute. The plane was more important than the pilot, mm-hmm. the Japanese. So they didn't give you a parachute.
Really?
But his family apparently made him one, but didn't make it very good. And I saw him bail out. I thought, gosh, he's going to be glad to do it, you know. Seen him go down, and pretty soon his parachute come out like a sock. As how it was, he went right down into the lake. I watched him. I said, oh my gosh, poor guy. he didn't have a good parachute. So that was the end of him, you know. So, but anyway, we knocked a T-line out of the zero that day. Mm-hmm. I didn't. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's one of the best things that happened to the zeros in a long time. But, of course, you've history and everything, read about Pearl Harbor and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we all knew about it, you know. And of course, when the United States got in the war, we were fighting Germany, Italy, and Japan all to go at one time. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty rough. And in those days, you know, of course, you had your book could tell you about the rationing and everything, you know, during World War II. But anyway, that's what happened there. As far as I know, anything else you want to know about it?
Let's talk a little bit about growing up. We're just kind of how life was. What did you do for fun when you were growing up?
Well, when I was growing up, we couldn't afford any bought in toys. Mm-hmm. We made all of our own toys. And we made slingshots, and we'd get the inner tube and cut it out, get your fork stick, you know, mm-hmm. and boy, you could, I guess I was pretty good at that. I could hit a bird for quite a ways off there. And the poor birds around the neighborhood were in bad shape. But anyway, then of course, we made our own fished equipment. And I got a hold of a little old $5 rod and reel there. Me and the boy, I must have been about 12 years old or something like that. And me and my buddy Dude Pound, we went down to what's called the around the river down there. It was the Far River, and the River Dam, Fort River Dam. And we went down below there, and we had some sandwiches. And it must have been Saturday or sometime. And I couldn't throw this bait out very far. So I let Dude Pan get up there, pull it out of way. He gave it a throw. All the worms we get on that hook. And it landed almost in the river, middle of the river, you know. And of course, we put it down there and put a rock on top of the pole. Pulled out our sandwich and started eating, you know. And pretty soon this guy up there by the dam fishing says, what in the world is that landing doing down there? He says, going back and forth up the river. Mm-hmm. Back and forth. And boy, I said, what the heck? That's ours. And so we started reeling it in, you know, and I couldn't get it in there. Dude, he kept pulling on the string, bringing to me, and I'd pull it up. We finally got in a big old 6-pound catfish. And so that's all the fish we'd had at home with that big catfish. Mm-hmm. Pat the Lindy all around. I said, hey, you got to see what good these boys got here. Man, they all come down there to see this big catfish we had. That's probably about the biggest fish I've ever caught there. So anyway, I love to camp out and stuff like that, too. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Well, I'm trying to think of it.
You said that you were born at home.
Yeah. My mother, doctor, and just came at the house, you know. Uh-huh. And the woman was bad there. And there was us boys. I remember my little brother coming at home there, you know. Me and Clayton, my other brother, younger than I was, we went to school. I was probably about second or third grade, and he was probably in the first or second, I can't remember for sure. But anyway, we'd come home at noontime to eat. We'd come home for lunch. Mm-hmm. And that my mother was laying in there, and there was a little old baby laying beside. And where in the heck did that thing come from? So my Aunt Cora was out in the back doing the wash, you know. Mm-hmm. So we went out there and told her, said, "I don't know where you got that baby from, take it back." That was my younger brother, and then of course I had one younger sister after that. Mm-hmm. So. But my folks had a tough time, but they had good high morals, and they wanted to raise us right there. Mm-hmm. So. And all of us boys are still going, but we're all getting up there now pretty good. Mm-hmm. And so it's the way it goes in life. See, when I came here in 48, I said all the guys that was here in business are all gone now. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it turns over, you know, gee whiz.
What kind of businesses were here?
Oh, about everything. There's drug stores, and over here, at Clark's, at Goods, that side where they're got the gifts in there, you know. Uh-huh. That was a grocery store.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was a grocery store up there. It's kind of here. Uh-huh. And it quite a little while there, and then of course there was the drug store there in the corner where there is now. That was Tuggle Drug at that time.
That was what?
Tuggle Drug.
Tuggle.
T-U-G-G-E-L-E, Tuggle.
Wow.
Tuggle Drug. Then down where the, the insurance company down here on the street. That was Clark's Pharmacy down there. Uh-huh. Ralph had that down there. And of course, in 68, I think it was, they bought out Tuggle and moved up here. Mm-hmm. And they made Clark's Pharmacy up here. So that's what happened there. Now listen, then, of course, that building, is it south of Gector's? I think it is. That used to be a bank. That was a bank in there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when I come here, it was a city clerk's office. And then you go on down the street there, then who's in there now? I can't think. Through the Western Auto Store, and there's a furniture store. When I first came to town, you'd be in there. That's on down the next part of the block. And then there was a variety store in there. And then there was another grocery store on the end down there. And so on this side of the street, this was here, was an international harvester tractors and stuff all sold in here, this building.
Oh, yeah?
And it was all harvesters. International Harvesters building. Uh-huh. And then, of course, over across the street there, right there, was the Western Cafe. It was a cafe for a long time there. Uh-huh. And then on north of it was a Jacksonian. It was over here, and of course they moved over there. Mm-hmm. And then Walker Sales was up north of him, and Erskine Insurance was up there. Mm-hmm. And then the Ford Garage was up there where Joe Butcher's got his offices in there now. Mm-hmm. That was a Ford Garage selling Fords. We had two dealerships here in town when I came here in 48. Mm-hmm. We had a Chevrolet dealership down there where the senior center is. That was a Chevrolet garage at that time. And up there is where the bank annex is. That was the Ford Motor Company.
Okay. So
we had, at one time, three dealers. Eddie Keene, he had over here where they got these apartments over there. They had a building in there. He sold Plymouths in there. Sold the Plymouth cars. So we had three dealerships here. Time. So, well, the town changed a lot then. Of course, we was real proud of our insurance company, but we folded up.
Yeah.
That's too bad. But that's life. That's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. Did Cimarron ever have a movie theater?
Oh, sure.
Where did it used to be?
Oh, yeah, up here at Miss Addison's got a beauty shop up here.
Oh, okay.
You're looking at that, there's the windows and everything in there. You can look and you can see where the window had a ticket dealer on it. And on the north side, look at that. You can see that word ticket. Oh, yeah, that was a movie theater here. Oh, gosh, way back in the 30s and old time, you know, and it lasted quite a while after I came here. Blakeman ran it quite a while. And there was a movie theater. We used to go up there to the movies there. It lasted quite a few years there. And of course, television came in. Now the movies are kind of coming back. Movie theater in there, yeah, I suggest.
How much did it cost to see a movie?
I don't know. I can't remember, maybe a quarter or something like that.
A quarter?
Yeah, I know. Back in my hometown, we used to like to go to Saturday matinees back in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a matinee there, and they said they'd let two children in for a dime. And so my little brother, he wasn't hardly 6 years old, so we brought him along too. we brought him because he's too small. Uh-huh. So all three of us got into the movie theater for a dime. Yeah, I tell you about that. See, my mother, I'll tell you how it is. My mother would take a $5 bill and go up to grocery stores and get enough groceries for to feed us family for a week.
Wow.
How do you do that? I'll tell you what, you know how to cook, you know how to cook. Mush, cornmeal mush, and if you make a meat, you make a casserole, it may go a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
I still like casserole. But anyway, that's the way you had to do it those days. Mm-hmm. You just didn't go buy a bunch of steaks because they were pretty expensive. Turkey was too.
Mm-hmm.
I must have been about 12 years old before I ever had a piece of turkey. Turkey was one of those expensive foods you could buy in those days, because it wasn't a big deal like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
They just had turkeys at days of holidays, you know, and something like that. And I was about 12 years old before I ever got to eat a piece of turkey.
Hmm.
Sardines. And lunch meat and our bologna, call it that bologna, that slice of bologna. And I know that when I was growing up, I thought, boy, it was terrible. These kids around here in the block was eating this boughten bread.
Mm-hmm.
These loaves of boughten bread. We had to eat homemade bread. My mother would, my dad would get about a 50-pound sack of flour, and we'd make it. And I had to get up there on the table, I started to turn that mixer around, making the bread. And those loaves were about that long and about that high. One slice of it made a meal almost there. But anyway, I thought, boy, that was terrible. All the other guys got to eat bought bread. We had to eat that homemade bread. Jim, I didn't know how lucky I was. I'd sure love to have a piece of that homemade bread now. We I ate a long time. And I got so that anyway, I grew up on it.
Let's see. Did you have a radio when you were younger?
I didn't have a radio until I went into the service.
Really?
I went into the service there and went down to Shepherd Field, Wichita Falls, Texas, in 42. And I had $4 to my name when I went into the service. It was 3 months before I ever got paid.
Wow.
And I remember that that after 3 months, I just had to find use the razor bridge and look at that. I couldn't afford, but finally, they gave me $90, you know, pay, man, back pay. I never had that kind of money in my life. So I went into town, you couldn't buy these portable little radios, you know, battery radios at all. So I bought a little old table radio, and I carried that all the way around over to China and back in the duffel bag. When I got back home, all I had was the tubes and the speaker and it was still playing. But the case was all busted up and gone.
Mm-hmm. So when did you get your first TV?
Your TV?
Your TV, yeah.
Oh, okay. That was about 1957. I didn't ever get TV until we had a station out here. Probably it was in 56 or somewhere in there. Now we got the TV station out here. And that was Lee Warner's deal, you know. And I was out there watching to put that antenna up out there. That's quite an antenna out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they still could broadcast their own program if they wanted to right there at the station.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd do that a lot, you know, during the first time. But I only had one station here. At that time, Channel 6, CBS. And then, of course, ABC come in and NBC come in. And all three of them are here now, you know. If you don't have a Warner deal, basically, you know, because a guy come out here, we had Rotary, and talking about TVs, he says, this area out here, says, I'm afraid you'll never have TV out here because this is too small an area people watch. So,
mm-hmm.
Of course, me and Lee Warner heard that. Next thing he's going to do is build a TV station. So he did. Yeah, he did there. It's still out there, so it's town, but it's all remote now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody ever out there at all. It's all turned on and off remote, you know. And so that's the way it went there. I had it just black and white. I don't know when I got my first color TV, but it was quite a few years after that. Television was all black and white, you know. But we thought that was so great. We got us our TV home. We're sitting there watching the pattern on the screen. They just put it on the screen, you know, so it's just a set for several hours before the station for it come on. And the program didn't come on. Man, we're sitting there watching that, you know, waiting ready for the program first day or so, you know. And now, you know, Jiminy Christmas, how things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
But them days we felt real happy to get just one station. We sit there and watch it every evening, the same station, you know. Couldn't turn looking if we could anything else. They pretty soon CBS and NBC come in, they'd get three stations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was it for a long time until they got the cable coming in, you know. So times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going right along. Ask me how long you're gonna stay in business? I don't know. I'm just gonna stay as long as I can, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got to get a second here.
Okay, go ahead.
Classic creation, can I have
you?
You son of a gun, you. Yeah, well, how you doing there? That's me. $50.
Really?
Yeah, they had it, you know, set it down here for silent auction down here at church.
Uh-huh.
I walked around and nobody had ever bid on the place that nobody had used for. I said, shoot, I put in the shop, I'd be messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put down $10. And of course, when the bidding was all over, I was the only one to bid on it. So anyway, that's what it is. So I look like I'm uptown with that thing now. I've been all these years just using the cigar box from the cheese box.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what else? You have anything in mind here?
Just a couple more questions.
Yeah.
Tell me about going to school.
Boarding school. Of course, I went to all my high school and grade school in Fredonia,
uh-huh.
Back in East part of the state there. And I graduated in 42, spring of 42. And then, of course, I went on into the service. But I said I didn't go into school anymore then until I got out of the Army, and then I went to what's called a horology school, or mm-hmm. watcher prayer school down in Weatherford, Oklahoma, and started in 46. And I went there for about 16 months
mm-hmm.
there. So that's the schooling that I've had there.
Is the school down in Weatherford still open?
No.
No,
the horology department is closed down.
Uh-huh. How long
as far as I know,
that?
I don't know. There's only one regular school in down anywhere, and it's in the panhandle of Texas down there. I don't know what to call it, but mostly they teach their students how to fix up these quartz watches and stuff. Uh-huh. And really, that's no complicated deal at all. You just replace the quartz movement. If you find one bad, mm-hmm. then just put a new one in there and put the old one in the drawer, even in the box.
Oh my.
That's old quartz watches, movements, wow. guts, you know. And I just put a whole bunch of them. I got several more beside that one now. Uh-huh. That's several years. You figure you put several of those quartz movements in a watch. A week, mm-hmm. so you get a lot of them.
I would imagine.
But anyway, that's what they teach down there, as far as I know. Uh-huh. They might teach a little clock repair too. I don't know about that, but that's all there. And of course, I was watching craft business a long time before we ever got. Well, first it come out with the Accutron, you know. Mm-hmm. Heard the Accutron. It was out for quite a while there. It was an expensive watch, and it took a special effort. I read a special on it to run out and fix it. And then, of course, here come the quartz watches, and that's when I decided I was going to have to work on more clocks, because those quartz watches, particularly the little ones just to see the numbers in the dial, they can be throwaway stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of people buying those, so that's why I come over here to this side to work on more clocks here. Mm-hmm. Moved over here, across the street over here in 83. I was in the drugstore and clocks for a little better than 35 years. And a lot of people out of town never even knew I was there. But they're fine about me now. They're bringing in clocks from all around.
Looks like just an interesting line of work. Just
You see, no two clocks are alike. Uh-huh. There's always a little variation in there, you know, so you can, everything's a little bit different. Each repair job is a little different. But I try to get them fixed up and going for them, you know, get them all oiled and get them ready to go again.
One really quick last question. Do you remember where you were at the end of the war when you heard the war was over?
Oh, I was right down here at Liberal Air Base. Mm-hmm. Down here at Liberal. I was flying up the instructor engineer, of course. And I was teaching the other engineers. We flew out with these pilots then, flying on the B-24s. But they were trained on the B-24s, the pilots were, because they were going to move over and fly the B-29s. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we were doing down there, you know. And I was out there flying those. I was an engineer nervous. Engineer on your plane, you had to check your fuel system and everything, hydraulics, all that. You had to make sure everything was working, you know. And you want to make sure the bomb bay doors open right before you drop your bombs. And that sort of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it there, but like I said, I enjoyed it and I never want to go back. That's the way it goes,
yeah.
I wouldn't trade you a nickel to do it again, but I'm sure glad from the experience there, mm-hmm. you know. So. But anyway, we've got the things going there.
Well, that's all I can think of for right now. Well, thank you very much.
I'm glad I could help you. I hope there, but you might have to ask them up there at the library about that small town USA.
Okay. I'll do that.
I don't know. I think they got that in the video. It was shot in 16mm movie film. There that they had. I told you, it's shot 35. You know, that's a regular movie deal. So and then they put it on one program, a special program. You know, mm-hmm. they worked all that hard, and an hour on the TV on the network, and it was all over. And, they didn't have use for it, so they mm-hmm. just filmed a library up there.
Well, I'll have to go look at that.
You can go look at it. You can learn a lot about Sigma on that one.
I'll have to do that.
Well, thank you there.
Yeah.
I hope I did help you out a little bit there.
Yeah.